Hello, it's 2:48 p.m. October 10th, 2013. Oh, look, 10-10-20-13. And of course, 20 and 13 are the two sacred numbers of the Maya for a lot of different reasons, and the Inca and the Aztec. Basically, that entire Mesoamerican population was fascinated with them. And we also have a connection to 13 through the Templars. Who were obliterated on a Friday the 13th, thus Friday the 13th, Serbad. In any event, today's Wujo is, everybody's just been beating me up. Hey, hey, what's happened? Where you been? What's going on? And they want, I get tons of emails. I got 111 this morning that were basically on my case to produce a Wujo or get the report out. The issue in the report is connected actually to all of the other stuff that have been influencing the Wujos, but the code that we use here is old. I'd originally come up with the idea in the mid-90s, early 90s, 1993, and most of the code was completed by, the core code was completed by 95, and I did our first real run in 1997 after I had all the ancillary stuff and had built up part of the lexicon. A lot of work on the lexicon, even at its small stage back then at 300,000 words. It took forever, fucking forever to get that lexicon initially set up because I couldn't automate it really because I was attempting to capture some level of humanity in a way in which the machine could also capture. So I had to put human values on the words as I went through and filled out each and every one of the elements in the array. And since there's 64 elements in the array, it can get, for each word, it got rather tedious. I never did not indeed fill out 64 elements for each and every word within the 300,000. I would still be at that task today if that were the case. There were many that could be preset to a base default, and we've tweaked them over time. That's what tuning is all about. So, for instance, we would take a... The array is all about trying to capture emotion out of a flat word state, if you will. And so we would, ran a program and set base values for certain classes of words, and then I would go through and tweak them by hand. And then alter each one to fit, you know, say, oh, this is probably this word, you know, is more intense than that word, so I'll up this value. And a lot of the elements of the array are simply were not used for many of the words, most of the words, actually. The vast majority of the words do not have 64 elements complete. I think there's probably less than 300 that do. Anyway, actually, I have to go and look. It'd be interesting to find out, because there's some element of chance there in the sense that the fully populated words have some stuff that the machinery puts in later as we go along. In any event, though... tuning a lexicon is a little tedious because words and their emotional impact change over time. So you can't rely all the time on the same understanding of the words. In other words, it's not your grandfather's Model T anymore. It's not your grandfather's great-grandfather's automobile anymore. Automobile to them meant something entirely different than automobile today. And so the context and emotional components of words change. Sometimes they change very rapidly. For instance, slang. Slang is really cool. Any language, it doesn't matter. Slang is where you want to pay attention if you want to see what's going on in the real world as reality manifests, because it's humans attempting to express their emotions in new ways to fit what they believe are new circumstances that develop slang to begin with. They need new words because when you're a teenager, you cannot believe that your staid old parents, you know, with their butts glued to with permanent couch lock in front of the TV, felt the same way that you feel at age 16. So your use of language must be different from theirs because obviously they're a bunch of schlubs and nebbish, don't get it at all. And, you know, you're just ashamed to admit that you're their progeny. Because look at them. I mean, look at them. They're your parents. Look how terrible they are. And so you come up with these new expressions that are uniquely, you think, to your generation and to your particular circumstances and milieu. There's a huge linguistic component that is racially, I don't like that term, we're all human race, okay, but let's say genetically, tribally, however you want to think about it, let's say that we all came from slightly different tribes, all in the same race. In any event, there's a huge component of this that separates along in terms of the, how slang works and how captivating and gripping it is in the nature of your particular culture that relates to your race as well as your age. Now, you'll notice that as you age, you use less and less slang because finally, by the time you're 40, you realize you start to get it a bit and you think, oh, duh, my parents weren't quite as lame as I thought they were and they actually probably did feel a lot of the same things I felt and it's okay for me to use many of the same words that they used for the same emotions. And so the tendency within the mature adult to develop and use slang wanes over time for specific emotional reasons that have to do with their maturing thought process. And that maturing thought process is influenced by the cultural matrix from which they spring. So, and it truly is cultural because we know that children that are raised cross-culturally exhibit linguistic characteristics that are those of their host culture. It's a learned response. And there may be, you know, some genetic element in it, I will grant you that, but it apparently is suppressed in can be suppressed in the cross-cultural context. And I'll give you an example of this. In fact, it is so notoriously cliche what I'm talking about here in terms of slang and how if you're raised by, say, if you're white and adopted black, or black and adopted white, or, you know, Asian and adopted Hindu and or Hindu or Zoroastrian or Scientologist and adopted into American indigenous population, your expressions in the language will be different. This is so cliche that Hollywood uses it. There was some, in fact, they use it repeatedly with black characters. And I can tell you why that is later if it's pertinent to anybody, but you can think of them. I don't know their names because I don't ever watch TV and I never watched sitcoms at all in this regard. But there was this black kid. He was thin. He had glasses. He had high squeaky voice and he dressed oddly. In fact, they make fun of the black kids that are adopted white by making the black kids as though they are white, including linguistically, you will notice. In those shows, the black kid who's adopted by white parents is usually much more reserved than his counterparts, and they make a big point of that. He doesn't use language the same way. He's always behind the curve in terms of what the current slang is. So basically, they're pointing out this in these sitcoms where they're trying to make you laugh at the mainstay of the culture, putting down the person who has been adopted out of the culture as the point of humor. When they're doing that, they're also explicitly pointing out the linguistic differences between the different kinds of cultures and how those linguistic differences, actually, if you look at them, are expressing inherent point of view or worldview differences. So it is quite true. I mean, I know this from a fact, having gone to schools that were 99% black and I'm not, that the black subculture in the United States, I don't know in Africa because I've never lived among black people in Africa, but the black culture in the United States, is language hungry. Okay. As kids, these guys are inventing words, language, expression like you would not believe. And then it takes this, filtering process before some are accepted or others are not. And most are not. And it's sort of, grist for the mill, and they grind through vast quantities of slang. And, to a certain extent, it may account this process that the black subculture in the United States goes through in use of words may account for the disproportionate number and influence of, black slang on the general populace as a whole in terms of its linguistic expression. In other words, if you look at slang by content and then go and try and put some kind of a racial origin on it, you'll find that vast quantities of the slang are well over 60% originate in a black subculture. and are adopted laterally before they are adopted vertically up into the mainstream. But I think one of the reasons for this is, if you will, the proving ground of language in the black subculture, which is all of these kids trying to express things in new and unique ways. They've got neo-mania in a way that many other cultures do not. Now, it is quite true that the black subculture is in a pressure cooker socially. All of the horrors of the social ills are forced in on the black subculture by the powers that be and the way in which our society is structured. And so one could rightly think, perhaps, that much of the pressure cooker nature of their lives, since the destruction of the black middle class in the late 50s and early 60s, since then it would appear that you can make the point that the pressure cooker that they live under accounts for this incredible level of inventiveness and use of language, and that may not exist if the culture were not as pressure cooked, both by, you know, by the government selling them drugs from one side and destroying their economic livelihood from the other side. So, but nonetheless, it exists that way now. That a disproportionate amount of the slang that we see percolating into general use comes through the black subculture. And then I can easily identify another 20 or 30 subcultures that can be grouped by context, most of which are not racially bound. In other words, let's take skeeters, basically the kids who are into small wheels of all kinds. Skateboarders, the little wheel boards, ultimately going up to the extreme end of street luge, but also including, oddly enough, there's a cross connect into the kids that do heavy duty radio controlled cars and other vehicles in odd terrains. They share a similar cultural connection to the wheels as the people that ride them. So they have a language that is in common with each other. And so what we call here at HPH, the Skeeter Group, can account for, you know, some 8.5% in any given year of new language that filters in. And, you know, nowhere near the 60%+ that we're going to get from the black subculture as a whole. What's really interesting to us, though, is that even though there's no racial barrier to liking little wheeled things, you know, skateboards and this kind of thing, there may be a monetary, barrier there that we can't overlook that may account for some of this. The Skeeter Group is predominantly not influenced by the black subculture directly. In other words, not very many of their members are members of both groups. Okay, so there's a very extremely small subset of the Skeeter Group that is also a member of the black community. But nonetheless, the Skeeter Group is also influenced in their use of language at a process level in a similar way. They're reflecting processes that exist within the black subculture. These processes do not exist in other groups that are also generators of slang. So it's interesting. I don't think the Skeeters are particularly pressure cooked. They may be in some emotional way, given their age. Most of these individuals, by the way, in these groups, that are not in the Skeeter Group, age out of it. They leave that subcontext via age and move into some other group, whereas most people don't age out of being black. But of course, even in the black culture, you'll find that as they reach into their late 30s and into their 40s, there is this slowing down of the generation of slang. And in my opinion here, because of the work I've done here, I think it lasts in the black subculture maybe 10 years longer than it exists in some of the other groups. The, you know, you could say the white mainstream culture, it's 11 or 12 years longer. This, influence of, slang in a direct way on a daily basis. So, in other words, slang is a useful tool for, black males in their 40s. And we see that white males start leaving it behind them in their 30s as they go through the maturation process. And they actually feel uncomfortable expressing slang in their 40s, and they're sort of starting to become Archie Bunker kind of guys, you know? So it's it was just interesting in terms of the lexicon and then the issues that we've got going on with our software. As you may have guessed, I recently had to encounter a lot of these issues with the lexicon again as a result of the age of the software, really, is what it amounts to, it, and the continuing nature of the change of language. I've tuned the lexicon over time. It's a tedious process. I do it in usually fits and spurts when I can get at it. And this time, though, I had to look at everything in a different way because of the great many breakdowns and because we have to do this IP tunneling to get through the denial of service wars and the influence of the NSA and all of this kind of thing. So I didn't mean to get off on a lecture into the nature of slang as it relates to our work or any of that kind of stuff. But we have to keep tuning the lexicon over time. It's not static. It changes daily. We don't have to react daily because a lot of this language, for instance, fades very rapidly. Some stuff lasts, in terms of linguistic expressions, may last 30 days or so in a general sense and then be dropped. So it doesn't do us much good to track that explicitly or to go through the trouble of enfolding it into the lexicon. But what we've run into recently has been hugely compounded by our personal issues of the health of our wives, both myself and Igor. Igor's wife has had a very terrible time that involved repeated surgeries, and they live a number of hours away from, or now at 1.4 hours away from a hospital. So when they have issues with hospitals, they've got to get to it. It's not a pleasant time. My wife has had continuing health problems since her heart attack last year. At this time, almost, we're almost at in the anniversary period, if you will, of a very terrible time for us, and she is still yet to recover from some of the health issues. And speaking of which, we were also, as a direct result of the introduction of Obamacare, we lost our health insurance. And so, along with I don't know how many other millions of people, the people that were carrying our health insurance say, can't carry you after January 1 of 2014 because the government doesn't give us permission to offer the plans that we've been offering these past years. Now, note, we've had this health insurance since, sometime in the 90s. I want to say maybe 96 or so. Whenever it was first offered by this company, we purchased, so we've been with them since their inception, and here, as of October 4th or 5th or something like that, boom, no more health insurance. So quite the, one more thing to add to this whole mix of what's been going on. Igor's wife is much better. They are through the crisis period relating to her particular condition. The condition itself is much improved. It was issues really related to side effects that were causing her problems. And she hasn't had any recurrences here for a couple of weeks. And so everything's really calmed down for them. For us here at Half Past Human, we're still sort of in a we don't know yet. We know some things it is not that is affecting her health. We just don't know what it is. And so we're still searching and still looking. Which impacts everything else as well. I've also had issues trying to get my vegetable, the human who works for me. I don't know if you know or not. I had two guys working for me, two young kids working for me a number of years back, trying to get us over some physical hurdles here. And I called them vegetables because I didn't want to reveal their real identity. And one was kale and one was lettuce. And lettuce went on to do international woofing, which is worldwide organic farming, float about labor or something. And kale went out and saw part of the world and came back, and he's working for me again. Anyway, trying to get him situated as regards to the winter. getting him a place to live. Housing around here is really distorted by everything that's going on economically. The distortion ranges from rent gouging, a whole corporate ownership kind of thing we've never seen before. There's examples of it I could tell you about. A little burg down here, just the other side of Shelton, at the very tip of the Hood Canal, where the land had ruptured. And it's just at the very end of it, a little burg's called Union. And I was shocked to see that there were a number of houses in Union that had been purchased by corporations out of Washington, D.C., New York, and Chicago. And these houses were being rented out. Now, I doubt anybody from any of these corporations, A, has ever seen Union or would know what the rental situation is or any of that. But beyond that, you would think that they would do some level of research, because what the corporations have done on these houses is to set the rents as though perhaps, I don't know, Seattle level or something. Anyway, the houses aren't rented, but it's had a big influence because it's disproportionate to the real number of rentals that are available. These corporations have had a real influence on the cost of rentals, especially for young kids like Kale. And so it's a, no one was working full time. I can't keep, I don't have enough money to employ Kale full time, although I've certainly got the work for him. And so, my contribution to his income is relatively negligible, although it's probably quite key. Nonetheless, it's not like he's making enough money to afford these corporate rents that are being charged. So it becomes a real hurdle. We've had the same kind of issues here because Kathy's health is such we're not going to be able to relocate into a place that would be more accommodating to the what we need now at age 60, especially for her health issues. And so what I've had to do is I've had to rehab our house here while trying to tune the lexicon and repair all this old software, which, getting back to it, the software was basically conceptualized in 93, had its own shape by 97, and I've been following that shape and dealing with the issues since then. It's never had a major rewrite. It's one of those deals where I could write it or document it, not both. There's no real reason to document it if it's just my own processes. Because I read my own code effectively, because I write, well, anyway, I write code very clear for myself. Although over time we've gotten to the point where our software is as old as my house here. And we've been in this place for 26 years, so I'm doing a 26-year maintenance, and basically, which is a rehabilitation of everything. From, from the roof down through to the plumbing and next and the electrical. I've still got a couple of the electrical bits to do. Anyway, though, the software is pretty much the same thing. I would love to be able to do a roof to crawl space rehab on the software, but it would just take too long. At this stage, it'd probably take the better part of a year to lay it out and redesign it, and then and rewrite it. Much of the code could, of course, be reused, but when you change context like that, you can bring over predicates and instances of individual functions, from C and C++ and this kind of thing, and use inheritance. But I very much dislike bloatware, and we're in a situation here where we have so many different kinds of processes and so many different sublanguages that the metaphors of each of the languages have intruded, as they should, on the code for that language, and so it's not an easy swap. But we've been able to isolate some of the key areas that have broken down in the process of retuning the lexicon, which is what forced all of this to begin with. There have been some major changes over time in terms of the language on the internet. One can note that I was correct about the immediacy values, because now, if you'll just look and see in YouTube videos and in audios and in written material on the net, how often you see the hashtag in front of something. That indicates the influence of one of the major generators of the immediacy values, which is all the texting in all of its forms, tweets, etc. And so we're now flooded with the immediacy values. Well, we discovered here over the course of this last run that there are some other I don't want to go into them for a bunch of different reasons, but there's some other linguistic objets that are arising on their own or are generated, I can't tell yet, but nonetheless, they're intruding in on the process the same way that the immediacy data flood had intruded, in the same way that the context change that was temporally concurrent with the illegal alien movement here in the year in 2004 and 5 in the United States, the same way that that occurred. So there's linguistically, there's yet more evolution occurring. As a result of that, I've had to approach certain things at a very deep and fundamental level, which is which is terrible, guys. It's like knowing you've got to crawl under the house and you've got to haul down all this stuff with you, including your electric lights and flashlights in case you lose electricity while you're down there because there's a storm going on at the time. And you've got to literally disconnect all of the intake lines into your place and drain the whole system. It's antiquated copper, and you've got to go through and do about, you know, what you hope is only about 5 or 6 major modifications, where you have to, you know, use your little tool and cut through the line and splice a T in and direct things off over this way and so on. And that's very much what it's like. You're working in an environment, at this stage with 300 plus executable programs, each prone to breaking on their own in specific ways. Plus, there's out there guys that are trying to actively cause our system to break in the sense of the DDoS attacks on our routers, etc. And the fact that we're now having to IP tunnel to get back long-term data and even shorter-term data. So it was a, and still is, something of a horror in terms of opening up the code. And you can take it for so long, and then you've got to simply stop and go off and do something else. Now, I fortunately or unfortunately have not been in a position to where I've had the days and days and days to be able to just sit and get into couch lock in the chair and devote to tweaking the code because of everything else that's going on. So in other words, I've been operating, trying to repair this major plumbing in our software, in this little tiny crawl space where you can't stand up and you got to haul down your electric light, and it's a long haul over this nasty terrain in a yucky environment to get to where you have to do your work. And you're crawling in the dark, lugging all this stuff over there, and you can only work a couple of minutes at a time when you actually get there because of being yanked away by all the externals that are going on around you. This has contributed greatly to the delay to the lack of time, not delay, but the lack of time to be able to sit down and do, you know, a dedicated 10 or 12 hours on this particular set of problems and a 10 or 12 hours on that particular set of problems. In any event, we are indeed, Igor and myself, gradually returning to some level of functionality here. That was another impact, was that Igor was unavailable for the better part of a month and a half, due to issues with his wife. But at the same time, to be fair, I wasn't in a position to call on him to do any service for us, simply because I was struggling through, and we're still struggling through, the same health issues here that we've had for a number of months. And so it was kind of like universe came and stomped on us at the same time that I'd taken on this full-time job of rehabbing the property here, because it's not just the house, it's the property. As you get to certain point in time, if you don't listen to your cosmic mama and do your yoga every day, you will find yourself getting very old and infirm and unable to necessarily you wouldn't be able to walk around in the same way you could before. So in our case here, it meant that certain parts of the property had to be changed to accommodate my wife's needs. I did listen personally to Mama Yoga at a universal level, and I do my yoga every day, the asanas, the hathas. So I don't have many of the infirmities that people my age do, but nonetheless, I'm having to deal with the infirmities of others, and they've been intruding. So the health of my wife and other people that I have to deal with that are my responsibility now, have pulled me away from sitting down and doing one of these balls to the walls kind of coding efforts. But now the good part of this is that it's allowed me time to sit and think without mucking about with the code and causing myself further problem. And so once I've been able to identify where the nexus of the current crash is, so far I've been able to reach right in and tweak one or two or three lines of code and get us beyond that. Basically because I've had to, you know, sit at a doctor's office or over at a hospital or something, or been driving or to and from and all of this kind of crud. And so I've had the chance to review the code in my head, and it'll come to me, aha, that's what's broken. You know, it's probably this or it's that over there. And usually it's the first, and I go in and think, oh, frequently I'll be able to know exactly, having had several hours to sit and think about it, where the breakdown occurred and be able to go back in and actually find that part of the code, step through in the debugger, watch it break, and already have a solution designed. So we've been able to get over these fairly rapidly once we're able to get at them. Now, the good news is that insofar as Igor is concerned, he's able to get at things on his end with the hardware and the IP tunneling much more frequently now, because he's basically back home and they feel that they're beyond this particular set of issues relative to his wife's health, and that he won't be called away as often, if at all. They're young, and so her recovery ought to be fairly straightforward now that they've gotten the doctor's mistakes out of the way. And Kathy and I have gone through that as well, as damn doctors. And also, like I say, you know, the Obamacare and losing the health insurance and all of that. It's just been great fun these last couple of months. Anyway, so there's that. We are working, no promises. The nature of what we have to do in terms of a delivery time for a report, the nature of what we have to do is complex, and the environment, again, that I'm working in truly is where I have to stop and do 4 or 5 hours worth of plumbing, go and assist in some medical issue, come back and deal with household chores, and then I've got maybe 45 minutes to an hour that I can sit and do some code. And thank you very much for offering all the programmers out there to help me with the code. But it would take me longer to explain it to you than it would to fix it. So it just didn't go to work. And hopefully there won't be that many more breakdowns. I think we're over two of the very significant hurdles. We're starting the process over again today. We should have some indication by Sunday whether or not we'll be able to go on into interpretation. If we are, we might be able to get the report out by the end of the month. Again, no guarantees. We can hit another snag in people's health and or hardware and or problems around here at any given time. We're over a lot of the physical hurdles here on the property, so that helps. There's still a couple of major ones yet, and we're in the process of assembling the getting our shit together to put the deck up, to put one of the yurts up over here. And we're going to then, once it's up, I can go ahead and shift a lot of the office and lab and studio to it, which will remove yet a further burden in doing the work. And that is that we're so constrained for space in our very small house here due to the impact on our living cycle because of my wife's health. It's our house has, it's a small place, and it has a small loft, and the loft actually occupies a disproportionate amount of the space because the house is small in total. And so we've had to shove four or five or six different kinds of function into what used to be the dining room. And that's spilled over to the other parts of the house. So it's quite chaotic in the sense of trying to get anything done that way. Now, we think we're beyond a lot of these hurdles, and within the next month, I'm quite certain we'll be beyond a number of the others and into a major relief mode, because we will have expanded into the new office space in one of the yurts that'll be set up here next to the house. And it's going to be quasi-permanent because of a lot of other different things. So now the reason for the Wujo, besides getting 111 damn emails this morning, bitching and moaning, saying, hey, you know, what's up, was that there are some interesting things to talk about. First is my little joke here, and this is a joke. We're not actually manufacturing these. But Kathy happened to see this TV program and told me about it, in which there was this house that was involved that had a kosher kitchen. And it had two refrigerators and two sets of storage for the dishes and two sinks, two stoves, two ovens, and two dishwashers. And, you know, so she was actually apparently rather envious of the two dishwashers. Not that we use ours for a lot of reasons. I hate those damn machines. It just sort of struck me that, oh, it's sort of like, you know, because from a Vedic, let's put it that way, a Vedic or a Taoistic approach, a Kalapa, an indivisible unit, is the same no matter what it is created to into matter. So the idea that there's somehow you can get corruption or pollution by your food sources and that kind of thing is seriously demented old school. And I was just rather taken by the extreme to which these people went in following this, you know, outdated dietetic restriction. You know, if the dietetic restriction was don't eat GMO, hey, I'm all for it. You know, any of those things that are practical, they make sense. In any event, though, I was thinking, oh, well, if that's the case, here's a good business idea for somebody. There's probably a small subset of really Orthodox Jews that want to take it, Orthodox Talmudic believers that want to kick it up a notch in their kosherness. And so here's what you do. Somebody should take those biological, chemical, nuclear masks and sell them for, you know, a kosher breathing so you don't have to breathe non-kosher air. And, you know, put kosher filters on there and have all your air filtered. You breathe nothing but kosher air. Don't have to breathe the rest of the air the rest of the planet does and have it all polluted and stuff. And so you can take your kosherness to yet another extreme. They're interesting masks. We use them for our sanding here, and they're a real boon for us because they're a full face mask. And with beards, the other masks always seal them perfectly, and these are really cool. They're very heavy, though, with those biological canisters on there, which plug up boat dust. So we've, you know, done some conversions, gotten the regular particulate filters and put them in a chain to support the full face masks. So if you ever get into a sanding situation, that's what you want to do, folks. Don't bother with any other kind of respirator. Get the type that fully seal around your face and your jaw and everything. A much greater seal surface area too, because they seal against maybe a 1 inch or 1.5 inch wide rubber band, you know, or a rubber a band within the rubber gasket that is the mask that connects to the face mask part. One downside to this particular thing though is that for a while the rubber smells like a urinal cakes. No, Kayla and I figured that they did this deliberately, that they got whatever that urinal cake fragrance is and injected it into the rubber, because the rubber probably smelled really, really, really bad in that confined space and is outgassing and stuff. And so you gotta live with urinal cake smell for a while. But, you know, hey, it's better than the smell of fiberglass or any of these other materials that we're sanding. Okay, so a diversion there into sanding and into kosherness and breathing kosher air. But here's something that's actually very interesting. Turns out that if you look into the history of this subcult of the current culture and cult go together for real specific reasons. This particular subcult I'm talking about we call psychiatry. And these people believe that they have an understanding of how the mind works and that they have used their mind to analyze their own mind sufficiently that they can quantify and codify their mind and apply all of the quantifications and codifications that work within their mind upon your mind. And that's the fundamental nature of psychiatry. You know, it started with this cocaine addict, actually a multiple substance addict, a heavy drug abuser by the name of Sigmund Freud, who died from from his drug use through having his throat eaten out through smoking all those cigars and the cocaine and all the other stuff. And he was in his twisted, drugged out state, and he invented all of this stuff as to how he thought his mind was working, and then said, you know, I'm normal, and so everybody else who's normal, their minds must also work this way. And then he convinced all these people that he was correct because he fell in with the Illuminati, and they decided that this was a good thing to follow on Mesmer's mental reductionism and hypnosis with, and that this was like the next stage. And eventually they gave psychiatry over to their task as a task of to mature it as a tool against the populace. The psychiatry was given over to the Tavistock Institute. And the Tavistock Institute, for instance, in the 1920s through the 1950s, was very heavily, actually through all the 50s, and still is today, but I mean, we only historically are able to get at enough records. They've put the clamp down in like the late 50s as to their activities, but prior to that, they weren't so circumspect. And so you can see the heavy hand of the Tavistock Institute in all these psychiatric situations where psychiatry was used to oppress the populace. There's a valid numeric thing out on the internet where it says, you know, in the last century, government killed 260 million of their own citizens. Okay, so that's true. What's also true and not spoken of is that in that same century, government imposed psychiatry, oppressive psychiatry. I don't think there's any other kind, by the way, but they imposed oppressive psychiatry on perhaps three or four times that number of the citizenry. You know, basically a huge subset of the, quote, industrialized world has been oppressed by psychiatry. In any event, the leader of this, at the top of the wedge that is psychiatry is the Tavistock Institute. This group is the group that is in charge of what goes through, is chewed up by and massaged and regurgitated by the Council on Foreign Relations. So the Tavistock Institute shits out some idea, and 3 weeks later, the Council on Foreign Relations is all over it. And they take that turd and they blow it up, and pretty soon you got a whole huge shitstorm because the Council on Foreign Relations is doing what they've been told, which is to, you know, magnify all this. Anyway, though, Tavistock Institute has given the go-ahead to the psychiatric institutes, psychiatric control organizations in a couple of countries to have a new disease come on out, which you've probably seen a reference to on the internet, and that disease is ARD, A-R-D, Alternative Reality Disorder. And in our, basically, alternative reality disorder can be defined as the unwillingness or inability of the patient to believe crap that is spewed out by the mainstream media and to accept the mainstream view of reality. So if you disagree with psychiatry, if you disagree with the Tavistock Institute or the Queen, the police, the IRS, Obama, Boner, any of these other fucktards, if you disagree with them, you are legitimately expressing a mental illness, which they will try and treat. Now, note here that once it's all codified, they may have really stepped into it. Because thus, in the United States anyway, anybody with alternative reality disorder would be able to qualify for Americans with Disability Act benefits for disbelieving their bullshit. And so it's like, oh, hey, you know, that's kind of cool. So, something to think about there. Something to consider. Let's see what else there was. Oh yeah, Bitcoin. Okay. There's a bunch of course, all the economic crap as a result of the quasi-shutdown of, what is it now, 9% of the U.S. federal government. And the government, the organization that is the corporation, the United States, is furloughed some used to be 18%, but now they're down to like 9% of their workforce. In any event, a lot of Bitcoin news over the past couple of weeks we've been sort of looking for. One was the arrest. I wasn't looking for this specifically because it never really dawned on me it would express itself this way. But I've been looking for the decriminalization of Bitcoin. And that's probably occurred with the arrest of Dread Pirate Roberts and the shutdown of Silk Road and the seizure of his 600,000 plus bitcoins worth over $80 million, as well as the seizure of 26,000 bitcoins that were in the escrow account at Silk Road at the time that the servers were seized. And so I'd been waiting for this decriminalization because that's what the data had suggested, that somehow Bitcoin would be decriminalized. And in essence, the FBI has done that for us. The FBI has come on in and has arrested and is removed from the operation of Silk Road. Well, actually, they've removed, in their view, a huge criminal enterprise. But at the same time, they've removed the criminal connection itself that Bitcoin used to have. A lot of people you will find are reasonably astute economists and economic thinkers are afraid of Bitcoin and express their thoughts about Bitcoin in words of fear, and much of that fear relates to government. And frequently, those people that are saying, you know, they're, oh, no point getting involved in Bitcoin, you know, it'll still be taxed and government will come and take it away from you and all this kind of stuff. It's like, well, so what if it's taxed? Everything else is taxed. I'm not trying to get away from tax in using Bitcoin. I'm trying to get away from the damn U.S. dollar and the goddamn them all to hell Federal Reserve pedophilic fucktard war machinery. That's been the ruination of this planet and the ruination of my generation. It's killed off more of my friends and family members than any other single thing on this whole damn planet. And so I'll pay taxes, especially if we can get rid of the fucking Fed and allow some sanity to come back into our lives that doesn't include vast quantities of bribery to all of the goddamn fucking politicians. I am not bitter, by the way. I am a real planetary patriot and a human race aficionado. I like humans, and I can see all the shit that's wrong, and I just want to change it and make a lot of it better, and I don't like being ruled by a criminal gang that prints their own money that doesn't have any skin in the game. And so I just want to get rid of the Fed. Now, of course, that's an expression of my alternate reality disorder. So nobody can get on my case because I can claim ADA rights. You know, you can't criticize me. This is my disease talking here. Anyway, and so sitting there talking to my disease about all of this kind of stuff with the Bitcoin, my point for using Bitcoin has no relationship whatsoever to trying to avoid taxes. That's not the point of the thing. Others may use it that way, but that's not my point. My point is echoed if you go to Bitcoin Magazine by an insert to a recent article, and that is that my point is a free people need a free money, and the U.S. dollar ain't free. We're paying the fucking, Zionist pedophilic rentier landlords via the Federal Reserve. And so what I want to do is I want to, you know, have as many people involved in Bitcoin as possible and just let the Federal Reserve go off and, you know, play with themselves until they're mentally and physically as debased as they are morally. And then they'll just go away. They won't be an issue anymore. Well, one of the reasons I wanted to sit down and do a Wujo today and actually took the opportunity to schedule the time amidst everything else, besides the 110 emails today alone, was the 111, was the some of the stuff in the data that we'd gotten at prior to the previous breakdown relates to the economy and what appears to be, within the data anyway, a reasonable likelihood that we'll actually have some kind of a default as a result of the politicians fucking around. Now, I personally think this is cool. I don't think they should raise the debt ceiling. I think we need to, we've lived 100 years under the tyranny of the Fed. There's never any global war until we had central banks. Any of these other metrics one cares to use as to why we should get rid of the things, now is the time. And our data sets just happen to be saying, and I'm not unable to do an interpretation because we never got that far in the process, but I was able to, in the process of doing the examination on part of the fix, I drilled down into some of the data relative to markets and discovered that, oh, hey, look, you know, at the surface level, without any of the interpretation, the high-level linguistics would appear to be suggesting that we got a default coming. That, you know, the fuckers are going to actually, and there was an unwitting or unwilling default. So there's modifiers to it. The unwilling and the unwitting was what actually followed. And so so that particular data set there, when I was doing my notes here, see, where was it? I'll have to track it down here. Where it is. Is that the number? Yeah, the data suggests that just at a very high level, that the underwater nature, the huge level of floating on a lake of debt or floating under a lake of debt of the federal government is exposed as a result of the machinations around and negotiations around this theater of the debt ceiling. And so part of what was really interesting in that was the huge preponderance on the other side of the equation of Bitcoin references. Now, that's all I have, is just a numeric value relative to the other language. Bitcoin was well overrepresented. So in Wall Street speak, basically what I'm saying is that Bitcoin was overweighted in the resultant equation associated with the under the lake, floating on a under a lake of debt, and unwitting or unwilling, both of those were the words I was following, default. Now, that's all I've got. Sorry, can't go any further. Don't have any more of the data on that. But it was sort of interesting because before the program crapped out on us, it produced a set that, you know, at that level, suggests that indeed, in the immediacy values, we're looking at some kind of a dollar, default, at least insofar as the damage component. In other words, not knowing what the supporting sets and stuff are, it's possible that we have a unwitting default simply because the bankrupt nature of government is exposed, and thus even when government and come to some agreement, have negotiations, be successful, and all of this kind of crap, and yet we may still have a default simply because they expose the Ponzi nature of the criminal gang at the top to such an extent that the confidence collapses, and thus we have a default in fact, as that would be unwitting or unwilling. So interesting. So that part I found to be somewhat an interesting little bit of stuff here. Then there was this other section here. Hang on, I made another note there. Let me go and grab that. Everything is just sheets of paper everywhere. And all of my little journals that I keep on the lexicon allows me to actually do some of the lexicon work offline occasionally down to a certain small level because, of course, I can't do cross-links or any of that. We're getting a lot of stuff in terms of the weather about major uptick in the planetary level of winds. At the same time that we had the market stuff crash down, the Terra entity was showing, as was the U.S. dollar, the Fern, the subset object that itself, separate from whether or not we would have a default of the government or the Fed. There was another subset all about the dollar itself, that those three were in process at the time when we had our crash. And so that was the snapshot I was looking at when I was repairing these things. And I made a few notes as long as I was there, kind of a deal. Anyway, the weather forecast is all about the weather forecast through our system here is all about winds for winter. Winds, all to hell and gone, caves with winds, you know, tunnels with winds, tunnels with winds, winds on top of you, winds below you, freezing winds, winds between your toes, all of that kind of thing. So a lot of wind, and that's as far as it went. I don't know if it's going to have, we have no geographic references, didn't get into any of that level of processing. But it was significant just seeing the Terra entity pop off with such a huge set for winds in just that little tiny bit of processing. And then insofar as the dollar one was concerned, let's see. Oh, I see it too. Yeah, the winds one had a curious thing on it. It had a small subset relative to volcanoes, as though maybe we're going to get a lot of volcanic action and the winds are going to drive the volcanic ash all over. But disruptive, anyway, disruptive volcanoes was a huge modifying subset of the winds. Unexpected. Didn't expect to see, you never see that connected. And then let's see. Oh yeah. Okay. Hang on. One other small note, and I'll get off of here. Go and do some real work. Tons of it. Finally got some stove parts, and I'll be able to get in and replace the gas valve and the controller there. But over on one of my Lexicon notes, it looks like the I guess the exposure or the unwilling default stuff, it's going to cross over to the dollar, and there's going to be a concurrently, I guess you'd have to say what we were seeing within the dollar probably represents the ascension of Yellen, the affirmation of the infinite quantitative easing, because it was a very large set that appeared to be positive and buoyant. In the sense of more and more dollars. So that's all we have in terms of the data. The winds was significant because it probably relates to what we've seen in previous forecasts and what we're seeing now in terms of our data and what I've also seen relative to the local wildlife populace and then following the sun and all of its issues. It's in appears to be going has been not appears to it has gone quiescent, and we've got a real minimum developing, which means our ice age is upon us, little or big. It doesn't really matter from our perspective as humans. We gotta be cold, so it's time to really start getting serious about that because I think it'll hit us with some ferocity. And then seeing the winds confirmed, that was something else that the expansion of the Earth always brings with it an uptick in the amount of surface winds because there's more surface for them to go flowing over, basically. A few things of note here. I'm going to have to, as I say, sign off and do real work in a little bit, but it was my fault that I wasn't on the Red Ice Creations radio. I had to beg off because of health issues, first of my wife and then my mother. And so I just wasn't able to reschedule because then we ran into problems with this particular collision within the logic and the software. And so I had to stop and do that. And there just are so only so many hours in the day. And it was a question of being able to, devote a few hours to an interview or a few hours to coding. And it's like, well, there's just simply no choice there. I'll take the coding. I've got to get that out of the way. And then we are all of us here attempting to get our structure ready for what's going to be a very bitterly cold winter in the Northwest. We're trying to get kale into some decent environment that he'll survive through the winter. And doing a fair amount of work in a lot of other areas, including getting involved in our robotics through Arduino. And the control software involved in that, the coding of that is really cool. If you're a programmer, by the way, you'll love it. No bloat or bloatware, any of that. Nice, pristine little bits of C code, and you press them out into the device, and then it goes and does what your code tells it to, or not, depending on how well your code screws up. But really cool. And so we're getting into the making our robot stuff, but at the same time we're trying to get 8 man-hours a day involved in on the boat. Usually we manage at least 4, but even that necessarily it's progressing relatively slow. We've got another big round of sanding to go. We've got the pod all done and just about ready to fix the decks and put a final layer of glass and resin on that. And then we can cut the hatches and paint the Vaca and then the Ama and then the beams, paint those. And then we can rig the boat. So we're within, you know, I don't want to, we're close. I don't want to get into that. But anyway, there's all kinds of engineering that have to go on within the boat as well, because I've got a craft through casting some complex pieces for foil control and for holding the crane and moving it into the appropriate position. And those are all going to be carbon fiber and fibers and resins and so on. And some interesting engineering there. So, you know, realistically, geez, we'll probably get it done by spring, hopefully of this year, of this coming year. In any event, there's not that much left, only a few thousand tasks. Okay, so we've been doing that. And we're, by the way, as we slowly get everything together for the to put the yurt up, we're in the process of working towards our new endeavor, which will be the production of video for a number of different outlets. Now, our video is going to be slightly different once we really get rolling with the boat, because it's going to be a very interesting video platform for many of the scientific experiments and tests that we want to perform and then put out on in a video format. So that's actually where we're headed, we hope, by March or April of this coming year, is to be able to put out the first of those. In the meantime, as soon as the yurt's set up, we're going to build a studio in there and get to production on some of the other videos that we can do without the necessity of the boat as a platform. And those are going to be fairly interesting. I'm going to do a video series on yoga for old men, and which I can show some, you know, like the Om Gym and how to use the Om Gym very effectively as an old guy. They're just really, there's just not, exercise stuff for, old people, for old males, especially. And, look at the old males. They need them. So at least they need to pay attention to a few of them. That's just one of the many, video series we're going to put out. A number of the others are all focused on, environmental impacts, everything from Fukushima to chemtrails and, you know, awakening kind of material that you might see on David Icke's channel at some point. By the way, something interesting, I don't know if I was going to explain it on Red Ice, I think. I think I recall asking Lana to remember to bring up the issue of Max Kaiser. And why I find Max Kaiser so fascinating. Not only because of his attitude, because he's really cool. And not only because of Stacy, she's really cool too. But because Max Kaiser is a unique linguistic property on the planet. Because he's translated instantly into so many different languages. Max Kaiser produces 3 episodes a week. He speaks in American. And that American is translated into other languages, Espanol, Deutsch, Russian, Chinese, a couple of different kinds of Chinese, a number of other languages, all in a relatively short period of time, such that there's a very little temporal gap between Max saying something outrageous, using slang, usually lots of it, in American, and seeing that same thing reproduced in Russian, Chinese, German, etc., etc. And then, because of the nature of Max Kaiser, his show, and what he talks about on Russia Today, by the way, which you also see it on YouTube, it's the Kaiser Report, because of what he talks about, it itself is talked about, and we pick all that up in our spiders from all these various different languages. So Max Kaiser, from my viewpoint, is like a serious boon to my work because he's an emotional bastard. And he just gets out there and wails on these guys and just rips them a new a-hole. And on the bad guys. And as a result of which, the translators have to some degree, try to approach the intensity that Max brings to the language that he uses. And so I see some of that effect, of that intensity, and those specific words promulgating through the discussions about the subjects that Max talks about after we've seen the various different Max Kaiser shows. And so it's almost like doing propagation experiments that we used to run here throughout the late 90s, where we would see how long it took to propagate certain linguistic forms across the internet. And with Max, we get virtual, same day response. It's like, 24-hour Martinizing. Here it's 24-hour Maxinizing. And so maximize your language and see it come out the very next day. And so Max Kaiser is really cool from a predictive linguistic viewpoint. That's what I called the crap I invented in the 90s that everybody else is also calling these days predictive linguistics. And, you know, they're trying to root it out of Twitter and all these other things. Anyway, though, so that's thus my fascination with Max Kaiser's show is both personal and professional in the sense that I can really use it in coordinating my spiders and tracking linguistic themes throughout the more general discussions on the net because of the types and nature of the language that Max uses in his American, and seeing that that's then translated into all these other languages by real professional translators, not bozos like me that just go and, you know, look it up in a dictionary kind of thing, right? Because we're not native speakers necessarily. And so the native speakers put the same emotional twist on it, and so that frequently that amounts to a huge language expansion factor, by the way, where the American might be 12 words and then the translation might be 35 or 40. And so I get a really good hit off of that in terms of our linguistic tracking. And I use those very frequently now. In terms of I'll have Igor plot certain Maxisms, and then we can key on those for tracking discussions about markets and from an awake viewpoint. Anyway, so just a little bit there about Max Kaiser. Our new laboratory is going to be set up to do what we're calling university-level learning experiences. And we're building, I'm having Kale do some work here and there as we go along in terms of my design. And I'm including in the PROA a bunch of components for Arduino sensors. So we'll be able to get real-time running tracking of salinity, everything from water temperature, air temperature differences to proximity of various different sizes of detritus in the water. I don't know what it's going to tell me, but it'll tell me something by the time we're done. There's all these cool little cheap Arduino sensors out there. I just can't stop myself from using them, so we're going to cram a bunch into one of the into the Bruce foil on the side of the PROA. And temperature sensors and all different kinds of stuff. Just so I'll be able to know. I don't know what good it'll do me, but we'll find out. I'll take all this raw data and turn it into information somehow. And so that's on for spring. And that's actually quite fun, is working out all the Arduino stuff now and designing it into the foils as we go along and knowing what we're going to have to do later on for wiring and all of this other components. And we've got some really ambitious Arduino projects here that will provide university-level learning experiences that people will be able to tap into via the internet. Sort of a new form of webcam, if you will. I guess that's it. Got all different other kinds of stuff going on, but I'm getting tired, and I've got to get on to my next set of chores so that eventually I can get to what we used to call sleep. I see it occasionally. Get to close my eyes and try it once in a while. Maybe I'll give it a shot tonight. Anyway, guys, sorry for the delay in things. We've just been swamped here. And it's a real trade-off when you get down to a certain level of no spare time. I mean, like non-existent spare time. And there's it really sharpens your priorities. I didn't need to be saying anything when I could be using that time and that breath for the health and welfare of those people around me. And we'll see how things work out. Anyway, good luck to us all. It looks like the assholes that are in charge of things may indeed get their default unwitting and unwilling. And we'll see what that brings about. Happy 100th birthday for the fern producers, the Federal Reserve note producers, the federal fucktards. They ain't a bank, they don't got reserves, and they're not part of the federal government. And why we're paying them a tax to print money for us, I'll never know. I mean, I do know, but we shouldn't. It's extortion, you know? If they were on my block, they'd be, pulling this shit at a local level, they'd be arrested for extortion. Saying, oh, you can't buy or sell anything without paying me this tax because I'm giving you the script that you use to buy and sell. Well, it's like, what a bunch of horseshit. Free people need a free currency. Free money. Yeah, Bitcoin's free. It hasn't got anybody's stamp on it. They don't own it. They don't produce it. They can't control it. And that was really interesting, by the way, with the Fed's raid. They still haven't opened Dread Pirate Robert's wallet. They've got it. And they can't get at that 80 million. They were able to get at the 26,000 Bitcoins that were in escrow. And those are being tracked because it was a, it's an open wallet system. And so now everybody knows what the address of the FBI's wallet is, or at least one of them. And you can send them little tiny bits of Bitcoin and send them a message along the way. It's just real interesting. You know, such is the world. Let's give, send some love and energy to the FBI. Send them, the smallest piece of a Satoshi, of a Bitcoin we can, single Satoshi. And at the same time, send along a nice little, text message. Because, of course, they're getting it anonymous. They don't know who the fuck you are. I mean, they can track your wallet address, but that's as far as it can go. Anyway, so I guess that's it. Thanks for all the good wishes, everybody. I'm sure it's helped. We're still in the midst of a lot of changes here. It'll probably going to be chaotic for us for a number more months, maybe a number of more years, and then we'll have a rest. And I think we call that death. Yeah, old saying, you're born, you work until you die. Oh, okay, all right. Well, now I know. I can adapt to it. Anyway, so that's where we're at. We're just working away till we die, and we'll connect back up with you as soon as we can. I'm trying to get the report out. There's a lot of stuff depending on it, not the least of which is a big bottleneck of 111 damn emails in the morning saying, hey, where is the fucker? It's like, well, I got to get beyond that. And thus the Wujo. I really had to tell everybody, here's what's going on. We're going to start running the processing again. Maybe by Sunday or so, we'll get past the particular hurdle that caused us to break this last time. And then we'll see where we're at. And we'll see if we can't get into interpretation mode over the course of the next week or so. And then we still have all the other external issues that are everybody's health and the chaos that are in the plumbing and the electricity and crap around us. So I wouldn't expect it anytime soon. And it's going to be interesting to see how the linguistic tuning works out. Already some of the results are a little tiny bit clear. So we'll just see. Certainly I'm hopeful by the end of the month, but I ain't making any guarantees at this stage. The universe has slapped me down too many times in the last 6 weeks. Anyway, thanks for the patience with our delays and our screwiness here. Wish I'd designed the thing instead of letting it grow in terms of all the software. And we'll see what we can do to get the report out. We're working on it as diligently as time allows, time and universe. And everybody should take care out there. There's a lot of assholes running around calling themselves your leaders. And one thing about following an asshole is you know it by the stink. Things are pretty smelly at the moment. So you all take care, and we'll get back to you.